Hey y'all, welcome back to the podcast. So if you've been here a minute, you know that I have interviewed hundreds of people who are so passionate about deciding it's their turn. We have interviewed people from every industry you can possibly imagine, and today is no different. I am honored to say that Gerardo Sagat is on the show today, and Gerardo is over in Switzerland, originally from Italy, and today he shares with us his story, how he has created a live coaching theatrical performance called Out as Humanity. And I think today you're really going to love his story, his passion behind what he gets to do, why he left his corporate career after 20 plus years of hitting the top of the top, as he says, in his business career to do the thing that he knows is his legacy, the thing that he wants to impact the world with the most. Today's episode was such a treat. Be sure to check out Gerardo's website. Go ahead and follow him over on LinkedIn. And please share this episode with a friend that you know needs to hear it. Enjoy the show. Are you ready to decide it's your turn to live your most purposeful, profitable, passionate life? I'm Christina LeCure, former professional golfer turned confidence and success coach. I truly believe every one of us was put here for a God-given purpose, and it is our responsibility to live that fully. For well over a decade now, I've been turning my life, as well as countless others around, from feeling unworthy, incompetent, and without a purpose to living a life I cannot wait to wake up for. Even on days when shit hits the fan. And it all started with a decision. Yeah, you heard that right. I said God and shit in the same sentence. So clearly this won't be your typical podcast, but what I can assure you is that each week myself and my guests are going to enlighten you, fire you up, and having you walk away with stories and strategies to not only boost your confidence, but give you hope that at any moment in time, you have the power to decide it's your turn. Y'all, I'm very excited for today's episode. A new friend of mine that we met in our YPO group. And before we hit record, Gerardo said to me, he's like, I have a question. Why are you even in that group? And I have, as some of you may know, I have had the pleasure of interviewing a few other YPOers as well. I am a YPO spouse. My husband has been a YPOer for about seven or eight years now. But Gerardo has graciously decided to share his time with us. And I'm so excited to learn about your life and your career, because Gerardo is a fellow coach as well. However, he does it in a very different modality, and excited today to hear all about that. Gerardo, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Christina, for inviting me.
I'm excited. So Gerardo is over in Switzerland right now, and I'd love for you, if you don't mind, I'd love for you to share with us kind of how you got into this whole journey of coaching. What did the former life before coaching look like? I know you were in a home office and so many twists and turns. So I'd love for you to share that with my audience.
I think that as the life of everyone, everything starts since I was a kid, because I'm one of those guys who somehow has happened to take a direction that, you know, belonged to me because of life events. So I lost my dad when I was six and lived with my younger sister and older brother and my mom. And then when I was 13, my mom got sick. So in the morning, I was going to school. In the afternoon, I was taking care of the house, cleaning, washing, cooking, whatever. And even the family finances, you know, with my brother. When I was 13, my mom was coming to ask for the money she needed to me. And I was 13 years old. So then, unfortunately, suddenly my mom died when I was 15. I lived with my brother, and somehow, you know, because of a kind of reaction, I said, okay, look, you know, this is a difficult time. I want to become, you know, a successful person. And didn't enjoy so much the education from my parents. So I had to rely on, you know, school, on television, on newspaper, on on those kind of things. And, you know, the message I got from them was success means, you know, I don't know, money, lots of offices, lots of people. And I had entrepreneurship in my blood because my dad was an entrepreneur. And so I said, look, you know, I want to become a successful entrepreneur. So I had little money, so I needed to pay for my study. And I decided to go and work for some clubs in Milan. I used to live in Milan when I was a kid. So I was organizing parties in clubs and earning my money, and that money paid for my university. So finished university. During university, I spent a year in Paris. And there I kind of fall in love with international tax. I liked the creative side of international tax. So I said, okay, I'm going to go that way. So I found a job in London, moved to London, and worked for like 5-6 years in London. And then at the age of 29, I said, I'm going to set up my business. So I rented a small service office in New Oxford Street in London with a secretary, and I started my group. And this group, with the years, became a 400 people operation with 10 offices around the world, a multi-family office, asset management, you know, you name it. Okay, so one day I kind of woke up and said, okay, I've done it, you know. Whatever I had in mind that somehow drove my decisions, I've been lucky enough to get there. Okay. And actually, you know, I was lucky to get there because then once I got there, you know, I don't know, like say you're hiking, you know, in the mountain, you don't know what's on the top. And then once you reach the top, you know, I could see. And to me, I said, okay, what's next? I mean, what's there? Well, I felt like, you know, I didn't know where to go. You know, I felt like there was nothing. I felt like something that I really, really wanted, I got it, and it gave me nothing. Okay, so...
I was just going to say, I'm giving a speech tomorrow in front of a few hundred executives. And one thing that I have completely agree with you on is the fact that checking those boxes, I got to check a lot of boxes up until I was like 27. And you check those boxes, and if there isn't a why behind it, you feel hollow once they're all checked, even if they're successful. I totally agree with you.
Well, I kind of started in a very difficult position. Yes, I had drive, I had determination, I have the other things that somebody has given me, okay? And I was able to get there. And I say I'm lucky, because if I didn't get there, I would probably still be chasing those things, okay? So I was lucky to get there. And once I got there, you know, emptiness, loneliness, meaningless, this kind of thing, okay? And, you know, at that time I was 45 and said, okay, because of this feeling, and then here I come to the most difficult decision, okay? And to be honest, in this emptiness, you know, in this loneliness, in this meaningless, there wasn't a way for me. You know, it's not, okay, I'm going to go there. You know, okay, now I've done this and tomorrow I do that. No, there was not tomorrow I do that. There was, I don't know. The only thing I could feel is full stop and decide to take a leap in the dark. So, decide to quit. So I exited my business, and it took me a year because I was there So by the time that, you know, the organization didn't need me, it took me a year. And so I found myself with nothing, zero. You know, and I decided to put myself into that position, exiting my business without knowing. And I said, I'm going to first exit and then empty my view completely and then decide what to do. Okay. So what I did is, well, I say, look, I'm going to start looking at, you know, the way I was before. Okay. And I was, you know, and I was, you know, I was looking at the behaviors I had before as a CEO, entrepreneur of my business, and notice all these harmful behaviors, wearing masks, ignoring, blaming, destroying, attacking, shouting, judging, you know, all these things. Okay. And I saw all of them. And I said, okay, why? I mean, why these behaviors? And I said to myself, I said, I want to get to what ultimately was causing those behaviors. So doing this kind of exercise, asking myself why, obviously I came to some fears, okay? But, you know, again, I wanted to get to what was on the top, okay? So, and I got to the top. So I said, okay, I want to get to what were the ultimate fears that caused this behavior, okay? And so I got to four fears, okay? One is no meaning. So fear of being meaningless or doing something with no meaning. The second one is fear of loneliness, fear of being lonely or ending up alone. The third one is fear of dependency. So to depend from something or somebody. And the fourth one is fear of uncertainty. Okay. So now, thanks to the work, I'm using this with other people, other leaders that I coach. But, you know, if anyone, I believe, looks at their harmful behaviors and does this exercise, they will end up at those four fears, okay? So what I did is, I don't know, very simply, is flip those fears from negative to positive. So I said, okay, so I flipped those fears and I came to meaning, love, freedom, and certainty. So inner meaning, inner love, inner freedom, inner certainty. And I said to myself, you know what? I don't exactly know the way, but these are my objectives from now on. Okay? Not money, not, you know, offices, not hundreds of people, not this thing, but, you know, what are your objectives, dear Gerardo? My objectives are inner love, inner meaning, inner freedom, inner certainty. And so that was the start of my journey that somehow took me to coaching. So I requalified as a coach. I started, you know, coaching clients, you know, C-level, CEO, companies, etc. I created, and, you know, it was because now it's different, okay? But it was, since the time I took that decision, it was bloody foggy. Fog, you know? And when you walk in the fog, okay, you know, I walked in the fog. And yes, I found those four that somehow helped me. These four inner objectives were like tools to me. But I also kind of believed that at a certain time, if I was walking that way, sooner or later, the way will appear to me. Okay. Now, the problem is sooner or later. Okay. And it is difficult. It was difficult for me. It was difficult for me to continue. Once I took that decision, people disappeared. You know, people that were around, because I was at that position, at that level. When I decided, zero, you know, I'm gonna quit that, you know. Yeah, people away. Some people say you are crazy. You know, maybe they're right, actually. You know, you could see, you know, these things you can see in two different ways. It's the same thing. Some people say, Gerardo, you've been so courageous. And another person looking at the same thing could say, you were a father of a 3-year-old child and a 5-year-old child. How can you take that decision? Where is your responsibility? Is it right or wrong, one of the two? No, it's understandable. And, you know, it's like everything, you can see from two different, completely different, ways, in two completely different ways. Anyway, so that was difficult, you know. It was difficult to continue saying and, you know, having faith and believing that, you know, something like this would have happened. And even when some things bad were coming at me, or some bad events or bad results, or, you know, I kind of had this feeling inside of me that anything that was coming for my good. Okay. These different things allowed me to walk in the fog. Okay. And then, yes, I was working, but it wasn't the way. It wasn't what I felt was my way, okay? I was coaching clients. I created a corporate coaching program. Fine. I created a postgraduate training program that I started teaching at Swiss business schools. Fine. But, you know, I wasn't feeling, okay, that's the way. So one of the things that then I created was a kind of a format of interview called Leader in the Mirror, where I go and interview leaders with the use of a mirror. So I asked some questions. I had a, you know, like a mirror, a small IKEA mirror with me. And I was interviewing these people. And some of the questions I was asking the guests to answer to me by looking themselves in the mirror. So it was called Leader in the Mirror. And one of these interviews one day was with a director of theater. Somebody who works with Cirque du Soleil. He works with various formats and produces his own theater, pieces of theater. And so I had this interview, and at the end of the interview, this guy looks at me and said, you know, this thing is amazing. This, you know, the kind of question that you're answering and the overall thing is an amazing experience. You know, he said to me, you know, this thing can actually become a show. You know, I think you can turn it into a show. And you can ask questions on some key words that express your intimate humanity and make it a show. You know, you have this performing arts experience and you put your question and you create the show. And yeah, that thing came, you know, went into my ear and somehow stopped there, but I kind of pushed it on the side, didn't notice so much, you know. And then I continued to do my work. And somehow I went back, you know, this little thing was here. So when I was checking in what was in there, sometimes reviewing, I saw this thing. I said, you know, I mean, this thing I actually like, you know, I think it can actually work. So I went back to this guy and say, look, you know, do you want to help me creating these things? And unfortunately, it was just after COVID. And it was very busy because of COVID, lots of stuff yet to still sort out. So he wasn't available. And I said to myself, look, you know, I'm going to go and find some other professional in that space that can help me create this. So, I've, you know, that at that time, I started this journey into what is today this performing arts show that I created. So I found somebody, a professional scriptwriter, and I started, you know, working with her to create the script of the show. And then I involved lots of other people in a space that, to be honest, I you know, I didn't know. I mean, performing arts theater for me was a completely new space. And so, yeah, so I wrote the script and, you know, then we put together the people. And now I have a team of like 20 people that put together this, an executive production company, scenography, artists, dancers, singers, and whatever. So now I created this show. Okay, so the show is, it combines performing arts with the basic of coaching, which are the question, and with also some storytelling. So it's a mix of those three things. And it is now the purpose of the show is really it gets featured in corporate leadership. So for corporates, organizations, associations, leadership association, it is, you know, the target are leaders, and the purpose is to humanize leaders and organization. It is a very touching experience that somehow gives a strong, powerful what is called technically psychological safety shot, you know. So it makes leaders, it creates an atmosphere for leaders to open up, be themselves, take out the mask, and be vulnerable, be human, and experience the feeling and what happens when you are like that.
I find it so interesting because one thing that, do you feel like it's easier for leaders to consume this before something, like when you were talking about your leader in the mirror training, how did you actually get a lot of the leaders to do that? Because I know people that are in those higher up roles, vulnerability, especially for males. I mean, I work with a lot of guys too, but especially for males is extremely hard to do. And especially when you're looking in the mirror, did you have any pushback on that? Was that something that was easy? No,
I'll tell you why.
Please.
A little bit. Okay. When I was at nursery, the people at nursery was calling my mama to say, look, you know, your child has got such an angel face that he can do whatever he wants. And people will say, so that, I think there is a little bit of how I am, you know, what I say. Yes, a little bit. Okay. So I'd say 10% the way I am. 90% is leading by example. So if I am vulnerable, people in 3 seconds, immediately, you know, people will be the same. Vulnerability is contagious. Okay. So I give you this example. One of the experiences of my coaching program is a speech that I give to board about vulnerability. So the speech is 1 hour. Half an hour I talk about, you know, in a very executive style, the advantages of this and the impact vulnerability can have, etc., etc. And the rest of the remaining half an hour, I share my most intimate fragility. Okay. And I ask them to share theirs. Okay. So what happens normally is every time is like this. People come in the boardroom, they don't even say hello to you. Okay. They probably don't even know the reason why they are meeting. Okay. And after half an hour, they cry and hug each other.
Yeah.
Okay. They cry and hug each other because, you know, people are just craving, leaders especially, are craving to find themselves into situations where they can be themselves. And whenever you create that space, people will be like that. So yes, it is deep. Well, it is difficult if you are, you know, it depends on the way you do it. If you lead by example, then you're going to get it.
Oh, I 100% agree. I mean, I think that it does take, though, in the beginning, the willingness. You have to find the people who are willing to even go there, because there are so many people that won't go there. And I think that you're 100% correct. Vulnerability is one of the greatest gifts. And I actually think that it makes you a stronger leader. I just know that a lot of leaders feel like they give an inch of vulnerability, they feel as if they're going to be taken advantage of. And there's just so many stories. Like, I love the fact that you realized the four main reasons that were holding you back.
Hey, y'all, it's Christina. I wanted to jump in. If you're enjoying today's conversation with Gerardo, I always like to make suggestions now of similar podcasts that you might enjoy. So go back and check out number 79 with Molly Fletcher. She's a friend of mine. She's a former sports agent. They dubbed her the Jerry Maguire, the female Jerry Maguire. You can also check out episode 102. That's with Ambrosia Boyd. She left her career in the military to start her own business. And episode number 138. With one of my best friends, Yasna Berza. She is the author of Healer in Heels. Enjoy the rest of the episode. And as always, I appreciate you so much for being here and sharing this episode just with one other person who might love it and need it.
So I'd love to go back for a quick second, because I think that obviously this journey is amazing, but how did you, obviously it's very clear to me when you had lost your parents, both parents by 15, you found a way to yes in order to be successful. You found a way to yes in order to have success, because obviously the fear was, I'm just never going to, you know, let that happen to me. I have to be able to take care of myself. But when you were 45 years old, had created this amazing company, 400 employees, I'm sure, you know, crazy amounts of revenue, had a family of your own, what was it that like really kind of was the top of the mountain moment where you're like, I can't do this anymore? Because I think a lot of people are almost looking for the almost permission to say, it's okay to try something else. It's okay to do the thing that you're ultimately afraid to do.
Well, that's a good question. Because the reality is, you know, it was the feeling, it was really the feeling inside, you know, there wasn't something specific that pushed me in that direction. It was somehow maybe reaching that top of the mountain and looking at the future, maybe, and you know, I was thinking, say, okay, do I want 500 people? You know, or 100 more people? Does it, you know, does it give me satisfaction? No. X amount of money more, does it give me satisfaction? No. X amount of more employees, does this give me? No. You know, yeah, so I don't know if I answered your question, but
No, please. All I was just going to say is one thing that I have found is that, and you obviously had enough self-trust in yourself. You know, something I talk about all the time is self-trust and self-confidence. Most people do not, in my opinion, personally, I just don't think enough people trust themselves to figure it out no matter what. And I think you knew you were going to figure it out, even if it was going to be difficult, even if people were saying that, you know, what are you doing, Gerardo? You have two young kids. Why would you ever do this? Like, the self-trust, I think, is a thing that a lot of people lack, in my personal opinion.
Yes. I don't know if it is actually self-trust or courage. Which might be, you know, I think they are different. Yes, I had the self-trust, okay? And I had determination. I mean, there are many words that somehow are in the same space, no? Courage, determination, trust. I had, no? But first of all, it doesn't necessarily mean that the self-trust and determination and so on is what people tend to show. To show, no, in today's world, on socials, on this, on that, you know, it's not that determination means, oh, I have to be strong, I cannot be vulnerable, I cannot, you know, this is the you know, I had lots of fog, I had lots of uncertainty, I had lots of fear, I had lots of this thing. And at the same time, you know, I say to myself, if you ask me, you know, did you have self-trust? I say yes. So it's not that having doubts, having vulnerability, having fragility, having, you know, walking in the fog is, or having fog around you is, or making mistakes, you know. I did my mistakes, even my personal lives.
So certainly, maybe it's the willingness to just take the next step in the fog. You know, it's the willingness to just keep showing up and knowing that you're going to make mistakes.
One thing that drove me is, okay, you know, I was thinking about my kids, no? At the time I took that decision, was in 2015. So my daughters were 8 years old and 5 years old. Okay. And I said, I said to myself, okay, what would I want for them? I mean, not me doing to them, but what would I really want for them? Okay. And so if I had to give a kind of example to them, what kind of example I would give? Okay. And I said to myself, the answer was, I have one life. Okay. If I have one life, I want to put myself into a situation where, you know, I can impact the world. Now, this is what I felt. Okay. So I want to put myself into a situation where I can impact the world. Now I have this show. My plan is today there is a show called Out as Humans featuring Gerardo Segat. Tomorrow the world will be full of shows Out as Human featuring Christina, Giovanni, Charles, here, India, Russia, wherever you want. Okay. So a kind of franchising of this world where we build this concept of show. The people with different guests, okay? And then, you know, one day, not too far, the show will be featured at World Economic Forum, G20, G10, this, and I will impact the world. Now I found that, okay? So I said to myself, one life, if I have to give a message to my daughters, is you have one life. You better, you know, shoot your thing for the maximum. Okay, first thing. And second is, if you want to do that, something that I've seen is, you know, do that. Okay, just keep on doing that. And no matter what, no matter what the people will tell you crazy, no matter what you will lose, no matter what, you know, the time it will take, you know, you're going to have to walk in fog for sure. If you want to do that, you're going to have to walk in fog. And then suddenly, fog goes away. And you start seeing little signs, you know, those coincidences that are not coincidences. They are meant to be. Because those are signs that once you see those, then you understand, okay, now the fog is away and I found it.
The three pillars of everything that I teach and coach is decision, faith, and action. And I think in order to truly do something, you have to make a decision, just like you said. You said you made the decision that you were going to do this thing. You were going to impact the world. You, like, no matter what anyone said, no matter what adversities, no matter what fog, you are going to make the decision to do it. The decision is clear. The second thing is just taking the action, taking that next action, that next action, that next action, and then having the faith that something outside of yourself. I'm a Christian, but I always tell people, I don't care what you believe, but you have to believe in something outside of yourself. You have to believe that that coincidence, that connection, that guy that you were talking to from Cirque du Soleil, who was looking in the mirror, that put that little thought and idea in your head is an actual, like, the God is just dropping that little nugget inside of you. And I truly do believe if people really follow that decision, faith, and action formula, they can do the thing that you're doing, which is living a life that you're so aligned to that you know is going to leave a lasting impact, not only for yourself, not only for your daughters, but for the world.
Yes. And, you know, to me, it helped me also a lot. I think that once you are, you know, authentic and vulnerable and, you know, you show yourself the way you are, this helps you to build radical positivity. So anything that comes your way, you're able to look at it in the positive, in a positive way. And if you continue with everything to look at this, then you'll end up in positive, in positivity.
PMA, Napoleon Hill, one of my favorite things is PMA, positive mental attitude, and finding a way to yes for everything. I mean, I've always said, I feel like I have one of the greatest lives ever is just because I decide it, and I'll figure out a way to yes for everything. And, you know, I'm willing to do whatever it takes all the time. I always want to say that I believe that I am one of the happiest people you'll ever meet, just because I feel like I just can decide it every single day. But it's a muscle, I think. I don't know about you, but do you feel like you've curated the belief and the muscle to always figure out how to frame everything in a positive mentality?
For me, it was very relevant to be connected with my to be constantly connected with my inner human being. You know, it was not that I, you know, in the morning I wake up, I have breakfast, and walk up the door and leave my human being, because we are leader being, we are father being, we are, you know, we are all these things, okay? But the reality is, in all these things, the inner human being should be there with you, okay? And so for me, that is what has allowed me to build, to train this muscle of positivity, if you want, and to be able to look at things in this way. So you, whatever happened in the fog, I lost friendships. I lost, you know, those are kind of negative things in theory. Okay. But, you know, as the example I've given you before, you know, there are always two completely different ways of seeing it at the same thing. And if you are able to say, okay, I'm going to choose that way, and this is the positive, I'm going to choose that way, and it's the positive, I'm going to choose that way, and it's the positive, then then fog goes away. Your intuition, something that starts with intuition, and then again intuition, and then the day after is intuition, and at a certain point becomes clarity. So there is no more intuition. It is clarity, no intuition. Intuition, you smell, oh, maybe, yes, I try, or... No, intuition turns into clarity, thanks to positivity. thanks to humanity.
Intuition turns into clarity. What a great line. I love that. I hadn't heard that before. That's so good, because I think clarity is the one thing that so many people have a hard time with. You know, decide it's your turn, the name of this podcast. I'm really a big proponent of making decisions, but I also say that the one thing that usually stops people is they don't feel super clear. So intuition turns into clarity. I love that. So the people that see out as humans, the people that invest in, you know, bringing this program to, so do you bring the program to them, or do they come and watch it? Like, how does this actually work? If someone's listening to this podcast and they want to obviously know more about the program, like is it just in Switzerland right now? Or are you doing it all over the world? Like, how does this work?
No. It's okay. So I put together this team. Okay. And the way I did it was to make it as flexible as possible. Okay, so the minimum amount of people, minimum scenography, minimum mass. So it's a show that is on demand. Okay, you want it, you call me, we agree, and we come. The show is only live, and it is wherever you want. The scenography is done in a certain way that it can be in a room or in a theater or whatever, okay? And it travels, you know, wherever people want it, it travels. So it's on demand, it's live, 1.5 hours. The skeleton of the show is 10 words that express intimate humanity, words like heart, hug, soul, fragility, death, etc. And around those words, there's always a performing arts. So it can be singing, it can be dancing, it can be poetry, it can be animation, all different things. And a question and some storytelling of my story. But, you know, that's not the focus. It is instrumental to then make people check again with their own story and live, you know, that experience within their own life. There are moments of interaction, 3 moments of interactions in the show. One is where people share their dream when they were a child. My dream was to become because of the club that I did, you know, working in the club, I had this dream of becoming a legendary DJ.
I saw that on your intake form and I thought it was awesome. So yes. When Gerardo filled out the intake form, he said he loves DJing and silence. He loves party and he loves risk. He loves nature and he loves music. The best like little information ever. I was like, what? This guy wants to be a DJ?
Yes.
DJ right now?
And by the way, the show has an after show. Okay, so.
Oh my God, an after show with, were you DJ?
Yes, but wait, because this is a nice story. In the show, I shared this story about this legendary DJ, you know? And I say during the show, which is the truth, that I never wanted to make that dream come true. And I still don't want it to make it come true because I didn't want to risk losing this dream. You know, people tend to think, for example, that dreams need to be, to make it happen. You need to make it happen because they're dreams. So the nicest thing of a dream is to make it happen. But, you know, it's not like this. Sometimes dreams are nice because they are dreams and they remain dreams. So legendary DJ for me is my dream. And today I still dream about becoming a legendary DJ. Now, because of the show and because this is, you know, my way from now till I finish in this world. So I make an exception, but that's only for the show. So I went, you know, I did like a full immersion with professional DJs. So I kind of became good at it. Well, kind of good at it. I tried to become good at it. And in the show, at the after show party, I DJ.
That's so cool.
For a bit, for a little bit. So, going back. So one, they shared the dream of when they were the child. The second one, they shared the most intimate fragility. And then there's a moment at the end that You know, they write this on a little piece of paper, and I go and take all this paper and I read them aloud without the names of the people. And the third moment is they write an apology note to somebody in the audience. So like a one-to-one apology. And they share these notes after the show. So this is what it is somehow, you know. And so I feature these corporate or leadership association organizations, you know, things like this.
The show right now, have you traveled outside of Switzerland? Do you do it to a...
Yes. Oh. Yes. So I, you know, now I'm kind of discussing and taking it to Formula One, somebody's house, you know, it on a wellness boat that, you know, somebody is starting this concept of wellness yacht, a wellness mega yacht. And so I will feature the show in the yacht into various different, completely different places for people. Some, you know, I think at the end of the day, what I'm noticing now, this show is going to two different directions. One is the direction of people that somehow, where this message is understood, is appreciated, is shared. Okay, so, you know, think about all these purposeful businesses, purposeful people that, you know, do some nice things for the planet. And, you know, it is the reason why it gets featured is because the effect of the show is to take out the humanity of people. Okay, so say, you know, I'm talking to some person who has developed an app for mental health, and they're doing some raising, you know, for the second phase of development. And so what they say is, look, you know, if we featured the show before, okay, people will be more, I'd say more open to the message that we're going to give after, and therefore the raising that we will be able to do is much higher.
That's so smart.
That's an instrumental use of the show for a good cause. Okay, that's a channel. The second channel is in the opposite direction. So to feature the show in situations where it is completely disrupting. You know, where there are, you know, Formula One, wellness on the yacht, people that in theory have nothing to do. And therefore, the impact of the show is maximized. Okay, where, you know, the result might be or impact maximized, or people say, you're crazy, what are you doing, you know. So these are the two, somehow what is happening right now is, this is kind of where the show is, you know,
it's taking you down these two paths right now. So if someone in my audience right now is listening to this episode and they're not in a position to bring your whole entire crew to their presentation, how can someone connect with you or how can someone learn from you? I know that you're on LinkedIn, but is there any other ways in which people can learn from you, from your story? Because I know that there's going to be a ton of people listening and there's going to be a ton of impact just from your story in itself and your passion behind what it is that you're doing.
Okay, LinkedIn, yes, but also through my website, gerardosegat.com. By the way, there they can see there's all information about the coaching program, about the show, clips, pictures, whatever is needed, and also the contacts, how to contact me.
Wonderful. thank you so much for sharing today. I so appreciate it. And I love the passion that you have for what it is that you're doing. I'm always so grateful that I get to talk to people, no matter what it is that they're doing in this world. I love a person who is so passionate about what it is that they're doing. And so thank you so much for being here. And I hope at one point in time, I'd love to get on that wellness yacht. Let me know when that wellness yacht thing happens. That sounds like a hell of a day.
Well, I'll send you a message when I'm there.
Please do. Please do, you guys. Please go and follow. Go check out Gerardo over on LinkedIn. You can find all of the information in our show notes. And thank you for being here. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you all so much for joining me on today's episode of the Decide It's Your Turn podcast. If today's episode resonated with you at all, please share it with a friend. Also, head on over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review and a comment. What is it that you want us to talk about that'll help you realize that at any moment and any day, you too can decide it's your turn? I'm Christina LeCure. I'll see you next time.